Let's get back to Luke 12 this evening. One of the great, 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 great reasons for exposition is that it gives a much, much clearer understanding of the flow of a text. We talk about, and others talk about, the flow of text. In other words, connected thought. And oftentimes passages are interpreted outside of the flow of the thought, and therefore the true meaning of what's being said is often missed. In fact, it's quite often missed more times than we would like to think. And probably in this particular chapter, the entire thought of the conclusion of Jesus' lesson is on the backdrop of the whole instruction of being aware of covetousness. And oftentimes this chapter, if it is ever taught at all, it's rarely taught with that thought in mind. You know, people will stop and then they go, you know, take no thought for your life, stop worrying or what have you. But the question according to Harley and the question according to the text is, what is the flow of thought that Jesus is teaching here? He says, in for example, in verse 22, therefore I say, well, therefore concludes a previous thought. So what's the previous thought? Well, the previous thought really began some time ago. It began with Lord, speak to my brother that he would divide the inheritance with me. And he said, man, who made me to be a judge, a rule over you? And he says to the crowd, well, take heed and beware of covetousness, for man's life does not consist of the abundance of the things which he possesses. And then he spends the rest of the chapter talking about the dangers of covetousness, gives a parable of a man who was the epitome of covetousness. And in the rest of this chapter, it's all connected. He's saying that covetous people worry about life. They worry about the basics, and God knows that you'd have a need of them, so don't worry about it. But unless you make the connection, you're going to interpret it wrong. It's going to come out wrong. Okay, the connection is to being beware of covetousness. In fact, let's just go ahead and read at verse 18. He said, this will I do, talking about the man who was rich and had all this bumper crop. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. And he said unto his disciples, therefore, or for that reason, okay, what reason? The example of the parable. For this reason, I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat, neither for the body, what ye shall put on. The life is more than meat, and the body is more than raiment. And we're going to continue at that point. But my point again is, it's connected together. The flow of thought is connected. He's not. There's no cutoff here at verse 21. The word therefore is the proof of that in verse 22. And oftentimes these passages get interpreted separately. They don't get interpreted as a unit. And if you remove the unit from the interpretation and the translation, you're going to mess up. The warning is still against covetousness. We spend a good time talking about what professing rich Christians are to do with their money. The simple truth is, God gave it to you, give it to somebody else. That's a simple, clear instruction that doesn't require prayer, fasting, you know, while you buying stuff, you in prayer. Okay, you buying stuff so that way by the time it gets to the prayer part or the really, really, really fake prayer, you know, the Lord doesn't talk out because, you know, I don't have enough. Maybe the Lord wants somebody else to do this. Now, he wanted you to do it. You just exercise more covetousness. Then we talked about in James 2, the partiality of those who are in the church. They look at people based on their appearance. They see the rich person, and because he's rich and clean and wears good clothing and whatnot, then suddenly he or she is prompted into the place that's best, the highest place, the honorable seat. And then we tell the poor person, whom the majority of the church and the kingdom is made up of, we tell that poor person to basically stay out of view or sit under my footstool. But God has chosen that poor person. So our partiality is evil. The intent of our partiality towards rich people and to treat them differently than we would treat the majority of the church, which are the poor, is evil, according to the text. Then we went to Proverbs 23 and urged that we would take heed to the warning to don't be weary. Don't weary yourself pursuing money. We're not talking about getting a job and doing life and paying bills. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about those, and there's plenty of them in America today, plenty, who weary themselves trying to make money, which people need to go back to chapter 6 of 1 Timothy and read the whole chapter and see that the believer has no business doing that at all. Okay, no business at all making themselves weary trying to pursue money. In fact, the proverb said, don't even consider doing it, because to do it is to lean to your own understanding. It is to dismiss the wisdom of God. Because the wisdom of God is plain and simple in that regard. Riches are temporal. They're not only temporal, they're unstable. So they're unstable here, and they're unstable in 1 Timothy 6. Both testaments talk about the instability of wealth, because circumstances can happen to completely eliminate any supposed or, let's say, pseudo stability you might have or you might take in riches, because riches have no stability. It's really the issue of how we interpret them. You know, we think because we have a lot. I already warned you today that the spending power of a dollar, if it decreases, let's say you have $1 million. And if the purchasing power, thank you, it's always good to have a backup. If you have $1 million, this is an example, and the purchasing power of each dollar is a dollar, then you can spend $1 million. But if the purchasing power due to inflation or taxation or what have you is 50 cents, you actually only have $500,000 worth of spending power. If inflation keeps rising, there's your money taking wings. Okay, so in our society, especially now at this particular time period of this message, and this is being broadcast in May, we're watching money, you know, go faster than flash paper, which is what the magicians use and other nefarious critters when they want to write information, when they get rid of it, they just put a magic paper and it just vanishes. That's how money's going right now, because the purchasing power is becoming so small due to the inflation we have now. And then when it goes higher, your purchasing power is going to get less. So in actual real money, you're not going to have that much. Right now, the alleged purchasing power due to current inflation, and this ought to cause shockwaves to people, like I don't think people really understand it, is 50 cents to the dollar. That's not a lot of money. So if every dollar you make, you have the purchasing power of maybe 50 cents, actual value. And if Joe Blow raises prices at the store you shop, your purchasing power, coffee hasn't kicked in yet, folks. The purchasing power at that store even diminishes the money that much the more. You see, so it could just take the normal circumstances of day-to-day corruption in Washington and your state and local government to make your dollar, well, a lot less than it was the day before, or a lot less than it was an hour before. You know, one minute you have this in your retirement, next minute you don't have a retirement. Okay, your money went faster than flash paper, and the eagle vanished before you could even see him leave. That's because riches are uncertain. And if you place your confidence in the uncertainty of riches rather than the complete eternal stability of heaven, well, no wonder you're worried about your money. You know, you spend all your life trying to make it. Now that you made it, now you're scared to lose it. Well, God has a solution. We're going to get into it. I've already given you really a sneak preview of what the Lord is going to say himself, and that is, sell what you have. That's what he's going to tell everybody. Okay, this is where we're going to meet. Okay, this is what the Lord's going to say. Seek the kingdom, fear not, little flock, your father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom, sell that you have and give gifts. Give it away. Not only does Paul say, if you have wealth, give it to someone? Jesus says, sell what you have. Now, here's the amazing thing. I don't understand why we're playing stupid. It is playing stupid. It's not that we don't know what's happening. We're just playing stupid. And again, the flow and connectivity of passages. What did the early church do in the early chapters of the book of Acts with their possessions? They sold them and did what? They gave to. They gave to those as every man had need. So they saw need. They sold their possessions. They didn't tell them to go on welfare. They didn't give them $5 or $5. They didn't get, we said $5. We know what it means. They didn't give them 50 cents and $5. They sold their possessions and they gave. It didn't say they lent. It said that they gave them. So the early church clearly understood what Jesus said. And they practiced what Jesus said. Okay, so we can at least hopefully agree to that, because that's what the connectivity of the scriptures teach. They sold their possessions. They didn't need them. It was excess. They sold property and possessions and they gave to those that had a need. They understood. Now we act like we can't figure that one out. We see Luke, we see Acts, and we see 1 Timothy, and we see this and Proverbs, and then we still can't figure out, you know, oh, I got to get that bigger screen. What's wrong with the big screen you have? Well, I got that on sale. The question is, why do you need it? You got a 42-inch screen. What do you need now? Well, I need to have a bigger one. It's never a need to have a television. It's never a need to have a big screen. Never a need. The only reason why I have basic cable is because of the television program. I have to monitor these people just like I always do. And thankfully, I always do, because many times they mess up or they don't run the program at all throughout the years. That's the only reason. If I could just have that one station, they're not going to give it to me. Of course, just one station for $1. I take it. That's all. I just want to know every week, will our program run? Because the minute, if it's ever over, because, you know, public access has a tendency now and then to just vanish. If it's ever over, you know, Time Warner's going to get a lot less money for me. They're just going to get the money for the cable that runs to the back of the computer. That's it. No more television. The only reason why I have cable, a basic cable, is for our program. That's it. Apart from that, no gots, no need. Why do we need the things that we think we need? What is the real purpose behind these things? I don't think folks are even bothering to ask. The need is created right here in the covetous mind and heart of people. As I said on the onset this morning, we cherish life not for Christ's sake, but for our sake. We want to live so we can amass whatever we want. And see, we lied to ourselves to think that's not what we're here for. We're not here for the gospel's sake. We're here for our sake. We want to live so that we can, I don't hear anyone say, suffer for the gospel, because that's not our intention. So it must be our own. Paul said, and again, the book of Acts, people like Paul didn't say in Acts 20, he says, I do not count my life as dear unto myself, meaning I don't count my life as something I have to hold on to. That is the antithesis of covetousness. People cherish life because they do think that their life is something to hold on to. But if you live for God, your life does not belong to you. You don't count or take into consideration your life needs to be held on to and protected. So Paul wanted to live not to cherish human life, but to further the cause of Christ until the race was over. Now, where are these people at? We cherish life for covetousness. We don't want to hear this. We don't ever want anyone to tell us this, but unless we first hear it and then accept it, we ain't never going to be free. And each time we turn away from the clarity of Scripture, we become more and more in bondage to our own iniquity. And he said unto his disciples, therefore, for this reason, on the backdrop again of the warning of covetousness, therefore, I say unto you, with the example fresh in your mind, the warning of covetousness, he says, take no thought for your life. The implication is clearly those who are covetous, that's exactly what they do. And isn't that the example? What am I going to do with all my goods? The man was worried and taking thought for what he was going to do. He deliberated with his own mind heart. What am I going to do with all this stuff? What am I going to do? Well, the Lord says, don't worry about your life. Why would he say that? Because again, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of the things which he possesses. Stuff does not equal life. It can either add or it can take away from your life. It is not your life. Stuff is stuff, life is life. The point is, God is in control of life, as he showed us in the parable with this foolish rich man. God is the one who controls life. And so the Lord says, don't worry about your life. Why? Because God is in control of it. What ye shall eat, neither for the body what ye shall put on. Is life more than meat? Or rather, the life is more than meat, and the body is more than raiment. And again, this is not only the issue of covetousness, but the thought here also is again the impossibility of having dual masters. Okay? Food and water and clothing, food and drink. What are we going to eat? What are we going to put on it? God gave the life, which is the greater. Will he not do the lesser? That is to provide for the life. Food and clothing are lesser than life itself because they dress and feed the life. Clothing dresses the life and food feeds the life, but neither one are life. They're separate from life. And since God gave life, will he not provide for it? If God is, and that doesn't mean he's going to give everything you and I want. You know, some will have to go to Goodwill. Some go to Neiman Marcus. Some go to Salvation Army. You know, as far as I'm concerned, clothes are clothes. I was telling Dee this morning, the pair of pants I'm wearing at church, I bought these pants. When did Kmart close? About 10, 11 years ago? I think it's been that long ago. It's been about that long. And these pants have lasted through many years and many church members. You know, it's done its job. And you would know it watching or listening. Why should you care? I hope you're only watching for the word anyway. I didn't come here to introduce no style. I don't want you focusing on the style. I want you to pay attention to what's being said. All these knucklehead preachers coming from all over the Fruit of Plain to go to the garment district in L.A., because they can't preach, they got to dress up those bland sermons with nice suits. Oh, you are so cruel. Well, you know, if you want to keep it real, you got to tell it real. If you want to keep playing, go ahead and play. Just keep telling all them lying preachers how wonderful they look and be distracted by that silk tie and that shoddy message. Go right ahead and do it. And then when a buck private demon comes into your life and upsets your life, you won't know what to do about it because you've never been taught anything that's going to matter. And certainly no exposition. If God has given us life and a body, both admittedly more important than food and clothing, will he not also give us the latter? You know, some of us have to eat and go to Superior. I'm not a fan of Superior, but, you know, if it's Superior or Air, I think Superior will do just fine. You know, some of us, every week is a sale. We just don't buy nothing that ain't on sale. And that makes sense regardless. We're doing that anyway. You know, don't make no sense to buy a chicken at $1.20 a pound when in 3 days it's going to be 59 cents a pound. That's just stupid. But see, covetous people, they spend money because they don't care. They don't think. They're willing to spend twice as much for the same piece of meat because of their selfishness and covetousness. They just want it now, so they get it now, and they'll sit in the freezer for 5 days instead of waiting two more days and get it at one-third or half the price. Then they can get two or three up and give one of those away to their neighbor and still have two for themselves. If they thought about their neighbor, you know, my neighbor, I see they're poor. I can help my neighbor. I wait the next day instead of buying the same chicken at $150 a pound. I get it at $59. I can get three. Give my neighbor one, maybe two. I'm only gonna get one chicken anyway. Give them two. Give two people a chicken apiece. We don't think like that. We don't think like that. Simple, practical means that require very little brain matter to put together. But it's going to take a heart, and it's going to take some love, and it's going to take some simple understanding and great leadings of the Spirit of God to decide how you're going to help people. But if all you look at is yourself and your family, as if that's a planet unto itself, well, you're not going to care about anybody's needs. You wonder why nobody wants to have anything to do with your Christianity, because you don't have any. There's nothing that God can empower. Fretting about such things betrays the loss of faith and the perversion of more valuable commitments. Sure does. If I'm just focused on myself, I'm not going to be taking my time to focus on that which is greater. And there are a lot of things more greater than food and drink and clothing. And to provide great stores to protect one's life and lifestyle while at the same time ignoring God is serving mammon. That's all it is. And again, this stuff goes on in the church more than we like to admit, because I think that the church mentality is hands off. You know, we can't talk about the sin of the church. That's why the world talks about it freely, because they know it's there. But it seems like we just act like it's not there. And we think if we just ignore it, nobody will pay any attention. That's stupid as well. The point here is not to worry about the physical necessities to the point where you just start, you know, amassing great luxuries, let alone the luxuries implied in the preceding verses, because such fretting suggests that our entire existence focuses on these things and is limited to these things. That if I don't have all these things, I'm not really going to live. You know, we look at Skid Row and some of these other places. Now, I'm going to make a statement. I already know it's going to be misunderstood, so I'll just let you know in advance, I already know it. I know a lot of those men are there, women are there by their own choosing. I know a lot of them have fallen into what's called hard times. A lot of them are addicts. They have put themselves there. They've had wealth. They've had jobs. They've had families. And because of their own wickedness, a lot of these people have lost it all. That's just the fact. Anyone telling you different is a lying fool. They don't take a genius to figure this out. Some of these people have gotten there with circumstances beyond their control. There's a lot of people that are there that if the church, not by doling a dollar and feeling good about ourselves, but really cared for some of these people who have wealth and have money, these Skid Row agencies would have a lot less people. But we just don't care. The church doesn't care. It's that simple. We've squandered whatever wealth we've had, still doing it, and we don't care. And that's just the truth. About time somebody says it. They really don't care if you don't like to hear it. You know it's true, and probably people more upset are the ones they know is true. True about them. As I said, Jesus is not talking about non-preparation for the daily affairs of life. He's not advocating laziness and a thoughtless way of life and thinking, just sit around and wait for stuff to come through the bottom of the door. That's not what he's talking about. No one's just going to slip a check down there for you. He refers to the preoccupation with material possessions of this life, i.e. the parable of this man who thought his goods were his life. You can't please God and mammon. You can't get caught up in the affairs of this life. You can't. You can't serve God and mammon. You got to make up your mind who you're going to serve. Because if you're going to serve God, that means whatever God instructs you to do with wealth, you're going to do it. And see, if it's like this to give that money away, well, that's because, you know, you serving it. If you can't freely give it to legitimate needs, then you serving that. I ain't talking about, well, you know, I don't have money to give. I can give you something. No, that's not what I'm talking about. It's about you got it. You just ain't going to give it. Because you've been searching in that paper, you done saw that thing, you've been looking for that computer, that television, that car, that whatever. You've been looking, waiting patiently for it to get on sale. And now is the time to strike. And God just happens to put this person right there in front of you. And you know it. You know he did. The Spirit of God's convicting you to the place you sweating. You know he's done it. And he's saying, is it going to be the doohickey or is it going to be this person? Oh, the struggle. Stop. If you're struggling, you're covetous. Already. Don't pray, seek, ask, knock, whatever. You're covetous. If it's a struggle to give that which God has blessed you with, it's covetousness already. Because what we've seen so far, what we're going to see, the simple solution is if you're serving God, you give it away. If not, you hold on to it. It's that simple. It's to focus on the spiritual. And I talked about Paul earlier. Paul was a perfect example of not getting caught up in this life, the affairs of it, nor the reality of it, nor life itself. He did not consider his physical life something to protect. Then he said in 2 Timothy 2:4, no man that warreth or goes to warfare entangleth or, you know, entraps himself. It's like having a fishing line. You're trying to entangle. You get all tangled up in it. No man going to war entangles himself or snares himself with the affairs of this life. It ain't time to be thinking about Sally when guys are firing bullets over your head. It's time to focus in on killing the enemy. You don't have time to be worried about Sally Sue because you ain't going to see her. You reading your Sally's love letter, you better throw that thing over your shoulder and learn how to shoot. Because any man going to go, oh, you know, the sniper's not going to, you know, well, he's reading his letter. I guess I'll just kill the guy next to him. No, that's going to be the distraction that takes you out. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life so that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. Now, we can't be entangled with the affairs of this life, trapped with life, be consumed with the things of this life, that we become anxious and faithless. Okay, because our allegiance is to God. So we can't become so entangled that we forget to please God. See, it's always either or. It's always this or that. It's never both. We can't get caught up with this life because we have to live in such a way to please the one who has drafted us. We're drafted into God's army. That don't mean go down to sing like some, we are soldiers. And forget that. Everybody's a soldier in God's army. One could become so consumed with getting, one forgets God altogether. That's an axiom. Once you start chasing this, you don't forget the Lord. He keeps saying, give it away. And he keeps saying, it's on sale. It's on sale. It's on sale. Give it away. It's on sale. I'll give the difference away. You don't give none of it away. Because as soon as you buy this, well, I got to have this to make that work better. So there goes the difference. If we are spending our lives in the pursuit of getting, then that proves one's unbelief in God and in his providing care. Many people have no spiritual life of any kind because they have set their lives up for the worry of this world. They entangle themselves. They trap themselves with this life. They get caught up in the deceitfulness of riches, the lust of other things, and not only do they get entangled, but they strangle the word, no fruit. Then he says, verse 24, consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap, which neither have storehouse nor barn, and God feedeth them. How much more are ye better than the fowls? Our philosophy is reverse of what God's philosophy is. God says, if I take care of the lesser, will I not take care of the greater? Our philosophy is we take care of ourselves and we give to the lesser. God's philosophy is the exact opposite. It says, if I take care of the smaller, it's much more harder to feed a bird than it is to feed you. He says, if I feed the smaller, the lesser, shall I not take care of you? He reminded his readers how the birds are provided for, and that we are greater than all these birds. There's a lot of birds in this world. There's a lot of them. There's no way to number the amount of any species of a bird, let alone all birds. That's a lot of birds. They seem to be everywhere, doing everything. You can't go nowhere without a bird somewhere. I don't think I've ever been a part of a country, any country, where I didn't see some kind of a bird. Overseas, in America, over in Korea, in Japan, even in Alaska there was birds. It was cold. Hawaii, birds. Hawaii ain't that big, but there's plenty of birds. Say, well, where do they come from? Where do they land? They live there. Huh? Where did that little duck over there? I thought it was a flamingo. I said, what would a flamingo, how would a flamingo get over here? I said, wait a minute. That's a mother duck with 10 little ducklings walking in a mobile home park. Never thought I'd see. You rarely see that at all. And she's a tuk, 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 tuk. And I'm wondering how she got there. Well, she had to walk, her and her ducks right behind her. Wherever she went, the ducks went. And God provided for them, because them little ducklings were chubby little fellas. She wasn't on no diet either, so they had to get food from somewhere. You didn't ask for a union card. Since God demonstrated his provision for the least of his creation, how much more will he provide for you and me, which are made in his image? We just don't believe it. That's why we never see it. It's not that we have to see it first and believe it. We don't believe it. That's why we don't see it. What makes a proper concern foolish is anxiety, and the illusion to which it gives rise in is blindness, namely that life itself can be secured by the means of life for which there is concern. So we think that life is secured by the things that cause anxiety in life, which is a contradiction. How can I be secure in the things which I desire, which brings anxiety? How am I going to find security in anxiety? So I'm worried because I don't have the things I think are going to bring comfort and security. And then when I get them, I go back to being worried about them. Worried about losing them. Isn't that stupid? Yet how many of us are that stupid? How many of us listening are that stupid? We just don't seem to get it. Give it away. Then you don't worry about it. It's amazing. Such anxiety is futile, for the future, which they think they can provide for, it is not in their hands. If we become so used to supplying our own needs and alleviating our deep-seated worries about this life, then we will have no need of God at all. And that's not going to produce any security and comfort. It's going to make matters worse, because you're going to depend upon these things. They become your God. Next thing you know, what happens when you have a society and you have an administration that wants to tax living daylights out of your security? What do? You get picket signs and demand and start losing your marbles. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen when the great day of inflation really begins to hit? We've seen nothing yet. In every time period where this nonsensical, you know, giveaway, government print out the money day and give away to everybody day, every other time in the history of this country, we have suffered for decades because of that kind of poison. And the difference today is our administration is doing it by the trillions. We have never been this way before. Never. Never. There should be terror and panic as far as what's to come to this country. And they're still spending more. The speaker's asking for $92 or $98 billion for some pork project, some nonsense she wants. Do you realize that's a lot of money? That's a lot of our money. And they just keep printing it up. Each sheet that's printed up makes the value and the spending power of our money that much less. And when this is all over, and when inflation begins to rise, it's going to look like a Saturn V rocket taking off into space. And it never coming down. You think you're paying taxes now? Federal and state tax is going to go through the universe. They're worried about the registration fees going up. Registration fee ain't nothing but a tax. I don't care what they call it, it's nothing but a tax. It's going back up again. Some cases going to double. One man was telling me his car increased from $168 almost $500 just his registration fee alone. Mine's coming up in September. I shudder to think what it's going to cost. I better sell my left leg or something, because this is going to be in the hundreds, multiple hundreds. For what? Because our morons in Sacramento and the governor decided to play shell games and footloose and fancy free with tax dollars. I was asking thee, how in the world does California get into 40 some odd billion dollars in debt? You know that ain't nothing but wasteful spending. It's always that way. Wasteful spending and taking the taxpayers' money and giving it to fools. What's going to happen when inflation comes? You think things are bad now? You think we're having unemployment now? You better watch history. We're so stupid. When inflation comes, jobs vanish off the face of the globe, and historically, many of them never come back. We're not talking about laying off for a few weeks. We're talking about closing down the shop. It ain't coming back up no more. But we haven't learned. We're going to. So you want to put your confidence in that? In that? I hope you like Advil, because you're going to be, popping plenty of, you probably gonna go to your doctor. Your last HMO visit before you lose your health care, and you're going to want that strong stuff. You're going to want all that Vicodin, and I'm having all kinds of anxiety. I need the strongest, stuff to put me on a real trip, a magic carpet ride or something. Come on, give me some strong, doc, because I don't want to know for nothing. Mm-hmm. We ain't seen nothing yet. And the point is, we keep putting our confidence in that, which is the eagle has flown. The eagle got a rocket pack on his wings, and we still thinking we can see him. That eagle been gone. You just watch. And I'm telling you, the day when inflation hits the atmosphere and the stratosphere, ionosphere and the other sphere, you better fear going outside your house. Because folk gonna lose their minds. You better have plenty of top ramen. That's about all you're gonna be able to eat. See, you don't paint a very good picture. I'm telling you, you folks that don't study history, y'all just don't get it. But you're gonna get it. You're gonna get that. But God is in control. Even for the believer, even during this economic times, God is in control. We become our own God if we start believing this stuff is life. Our worry becomes our spirit, leading us and directing us to do the impossible. And that's fulfilling our own needs. It's the perpetual catch-22. No matter what you make, it'll never be enough. Not because it isn't enough, but because you want more. Setting that vicious cycle in motion where you never learn, give it away. And every time people don't give it away, they just strangle the word. Then they start going after the speakers of the word. Then suddenly their churches are wrong. The message of the church has been the same forever, but because it begins to hit home upside the head, then suddenly you're going to nitpick on every little thing you could find as a justification that your church is wrong. How stupid is that? Real stupid. You start nitpicking people's lives and nitpicking this or that. And this, that, and other little thing. Things that have no relevance to anything suddenly become the only thing, and it becomes a justification to leave because your covetousness got popped and you don't want to admit to it. That's all that it is. In most cases, it's just that. Since God is in control of life, then whatever happens is under God's control. Thus, this should in and of itself end worry. The ability to end worry in our practical existence is only experienced as we obey the admonitions given by the Lord Jesus. And he's going to tell us what to do, but we're not going to listen. The man who is concerned about himself and who tries to find security in the means of life is shown he must make the lordship of God his first concern, and then anxiety about his life will wither away. Now, I know people are in the Philippians, be anxious for nothing, but by prayer, supplication, and blah, blah, blah. We ain't in Philippians. And Philippians ain't telling you to get a whole bunch of stuff and sit on it. People still stupid. They're going to try to contradict the clear teachings of the Lord. You think the Lord doesn't know that? He says, give it away. Give it away. Verse 25, and which one of you by taking thought can add one to a stature one cubit? What can you do being anxious or troubled with the cares or worries can put to herself one cubit or 18 inches to a stature? The point is, and this is a euphemism, you can't expand the length of your life by worry. You can remove it, but you sure can't add to it. The issue of worry is the issue of unbelief, really. Unbelief is the belief that God is not who he claims to be, and he will not nor cannot supply my needs. So I have to do it through worry. I don't trust the Lord. I trust my worry. Now, I'm going to just say this because I think it's obvious. I don't, you know, for me to deny it would be a means for you to leave and run and never come back here. The point is, I have worried in my life, and I'm sure I'll worry again, just like everybody in this room and everybody on this planet. I don't think I've ever met a person who has never worried unless he's already dead, that he doesn't worry anymore. I've met some mannequins that don't worry. They seem to be just doing one thing and one thing only. They're focused, but they're not living. Worry has never added a thing to my life. And I don't think I need to take a poll to ask you, has it added anything of any value to yours? Unbelief is a belief that God is not who he claims to be. That's what it is. And he will not nor cannot supply my needs, so I must do them by worry. I have to worry enough about them that I think I can do it. And then that's when you start making stupid choices, stupid decisions, doing things that, you know they're not from God. The Spirit of God says, this is not for me. I ain't going to speak for nobody. I'm going to speak for the Lord. You try to open up a door, Lord, close the door, Harley. Lord says, nah, this isn't for me. But Lord, this isn't for me. I'm going to go ahead and do that. Slam. Okay, well, I guess that door ain't for me. It don't take all that. My son already told you. You have to learn to believe me when I speak. You know, because the sad truth is, if a door gets closed, you don't know how it affects other people. So you can't be so consumed with your own thinking that you might actually have a door closed that might affect other people's lives. But I've learned to trust God rather than worry, because I know from personal experience that God has supplied my need, and worry has supplied nothing. Really, except headaches, anxiety, long face, and want to kick rocks and feel melancholy about life, and find some old story to make me feel good about how horrible life is when life is good. Life is wonderful. It's only bad when we start looking away from God, the giver of it. Unbelief is the greatest sin in the universe, for it insults God to deny the reality of his power. If we don't believe, we will never know. It's not that God has to prove it, then I believe. See, that's man's thinking. Well, show me, then I'll believe. God says, believe me, then I'll show you. He always does the reverse. Is to literally deny his creative power, which would be absurd since you live on his creation and are part of that very creation. How would you deny God's creative power since you're part of his creation? And since that be true, then just as much as he can supply a need, he can unsupply your life. It is absurd in that you deny God his rightful place of glory and honor instead of putting confidence in the creation, which has no power to create anything or to do anything apart from God anyway. Why would I put confidence in wealth? What is that going to do? It has no power. Listen, I've told you I have encountered very important people in my life, important in this world. I have. I mean, I've met a lot of important people. I don't make a list of all these things, but I've met people who, you know, by standards of the world are very important. And I've watched their fame disappear. And I've watched them come back, and then they're all, you know, downtrodden because the fame that they were used to is gone. You watch them 1 week and they're all happy because they get noticed, and the next month later or so, week later, they're all downtrodden because, you know, they lost, and that's it. One man in track and field, pictures over there, one of the greatest runners of all time. And I knew him in my business in Newport Beach years ago. He's very happy till he lost one race. He lost one race. And his fame disappeared like a shooting star. You don't hear nothing about him anymore. One of the greatest runners who've ever lived. And poof, fame gone. Last I saw him years ago doing some commentary, and now he's fade off into oblivion. That's what fame will do. It is absurd in that the alternative is useless and meaningless to supply anything to life, which is worry. It is all a matter of unbelief, and the church is full of people who simply do not believe God at all. And the proof is, look at how they're living. Look at how, where, and what they do, and how they secure themselves. And it's amazing how we're so arrogant to secure for our families. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't buy insurance and all that. I'm not even saying that you should. I don't know. Life insurance, I don't know. I have some, you know, for D and Tad. He's kicked me in the ground. I saw a program a few weeks ago where the average funeral expense is, I think, $5,000. But they have a super bargain, a cardboard box. Seriously, a cardboard box. You can put me in one of those. I ain't going to notice what you put me in. And the cardboard box is even priced for inflation. It's $100. But it's a nice looking box. Cardboard. You know what color it is? It's cardboard. It's not, you know, that fake foam looks like a casket. It's a cardboard box. $100. Just put it in, put it in the ground. Because the body doesn't care. The soul's in heaven. Body's coming up out the ground anyway. So I ain't put them in a cardboard box for anything. I kick them in the dirt, my dog on, so save the $100 for something else. I'm not saying that you shouldn't buy this or that. I'm just saying that go to the example of covetousness. Look at what happens when people surround themselves with materialism. They become, and they are rather, covetous. Verse 26, if ye then be not able to do that which is the least, why take ye thought for the rest? If we don't have the power, or since we don't have the power, whether by virtue of our own abilities and resources or state of mind or through favorable circumstances, to be able to do the littlest of things, why worry about the greater? What are we worried about at all? But the fact is, people who are covetous are always worried because they keep trusting in their resources. And the Lord's saying, you don't have any power, buy those to really eliminate any kind of catastrophe or something can happen. You have no idea what, you know, a huge inheritance to your family would do to your family. How many people have been ruined? How many people's lives have been ruined by an inheritance? They get money and they lose it. They go nuts. You'll be the best thing for people to do. Get a job. I think for some of the best thing, get a doggone job. But you can't tell people that. Because it's programmed into the American psyche. Oh, no. I want my family to have like $500,000 when I die. You don't know what $500,000 would do to them. Because you see what $50,000 would do to them. Then you're going to give them $500,000? We set in motion things that I believe we were thinking. We'd have to really rethink what we're thinking. We don't seem to understand the absolute waste of time it is to worry, nor the vanity of it. We don't seem to realize just how evil it is to worry, especially those who are trusting in their wealth. And this is all a part of their mentality. Worry, they're fretful, they're anxious, they can't give it away. Every single poll for decades, when you compare those that have wealth compared to those that have none, percentage-wise, every single year since I've been on this planet, percentage-wise, people with less money give more than people that have more. Every single poll, more charitable giving is given by those who are least able to give than those who have the most. A certain elected official in the high office of a very big house in Washington gave less than 1% of his money to charity. That's a disgrace, considering he's a multimillionaire. A disgrace. 2 years ago, made over $4.5 million and gave less than 1% to charity. And then wants to, you know, misuse scripture and dupe stupid professing believers and thinking he's a believer. Less than 1% of $4.5 million. That's ridiculous. Has he seen any of this? And then want a quote about the least of these, my brethren. Negro, you ought to be giving a whole lot of money to Negroes. You know your folk need some money. Folk playing. I ain't playing. Folk are stupid. I ain't stupid. I ain't stupid about this. Let's put it that way. Worry's not a simple little, oh, don't worry about it, honey. That's a sin. You said you need to repent of that worry. It's a magnificent sin. It's not a simple sin. It's a magnificent sin. It is an absolute denial of God, his person, his ability, his power, and his existence. And this is the kind of sin that is present in all those who are covetous. They will not give that junk away because they're trusting in it. They don't want to let it go. It is to literally exalt oneself greater than God, that one believes that through their own means, they can do what God cannot do. That is to supply their own needs. So they will trust in their wealth to do for them what they believe by their actions God cannot do. So they're going to trust in their wealth. You realize there are a lot of actors and actresses that have lost every dime just from the Madoff scandal alone, and then compound that with the economic issues. They've lost their homes, everything. There are actors and actresses that have worked all their lives to get to where they're going in their careers, and now they're broke and have to foreclose their houses and they lost all their money, and they don't know what to do with their lives. And suddenly, they have no friends in Hollywood. Have you noticed that? Nobody wants you when you're down and out. They just let them fend for themselves. Well, at least some of these folks got 2-3 guest rooms. Hey, you know what? Brother, we've been friends. We're in the business together. We know hearts. I want you and your wife to take the guest room. We got more than enough food. We have, 2-3 y'all out of? We take 2-3 actors and put them in the guest rooms. We got enough of them in our house. And we got enough food for everybody. Let's just live and see if we can survive what's coming. Because one day I might need to be in somebody's guest room. They let these people fend for themselves. Verse 27, consider the lilies, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. And yet I say unto you that Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Instead of being covetous, Jesus said, consider the beauty of the lilies of the field and how they grow. When was the last time that we really looked at the beauty of nature? Not nature on television. Okay, when I talk about looking at nature, I'm not saying, wow, you know, I got 1080p. I could really see the color of that flower. That's not the real color of the flower. That's just television. Why don't you go outside, go down to a flower shop and smell something. Look at a flower. Touch something. You see all the stuff on TV, you ain't never touched a flower. You go up to a fish tank and look at real fish. Go up to a hamster and smell the, well, don't smell them, but at least look at them. Or a lizard or whatever. Go down to your local depot or Lowe's and look at all those flowers. Just walk down those aisles and look. So this is amazing. And there's some places in LA that have flowers, some arboretums, they call them, whatever. And you just, the botanical gardens go, hey, look. Look at the beautiful flowers. You know, life is more than the 18-inch boob tube. Touch something. Look at something. Feel the texture of a leaf. Many of these kids, they feel the texture of their thumb. They don't even have any feeling in their thumbs anymore. So busy playing Xbox 360. They ain't got no more feeling in their thumbs. They haven't touched anything. They used to have butterflies fly on our hands. You know, back then, different. Yeah, put praying mantis on your hand. Let them come around and look at them, looking all crazy. And we used to pick up crickets and grasshoppers. Now, kids don't do that stuff. See them, just mash them. Don't even try to look at them for a little while. Just step on them, burn them, blow them up. You used to have remember the ant farms, the clear glass ant farms? You used to be able to learn so much from just watching an ant farm. See how they build their houses. And all, it's just amazing. We don't do that. Solomon said, consider nature. Look at it. He told his disciples to learn thoroughly, to examine carefully the lilies of the field and how they grow. They don't work like a man, neither do they spin or sew like a woman. And even Solomon, in all his regal splendor, was not clothed with the beauty of one of these flowers. And no doubt Solomon had tremendous beauty, but his beauty was nothing compared to the texture and color of one lily. Not one. The simple lily of the field was more beautiful than all of the glory and splendor of Solomon's clothing and kingdom. And yet, how God's provisions are literally ignored by multitudes professing to be his. The flowers and the fowls are all daily illustrations of God's provision for all of his creation. Every time we see a flower, every time we're reminded of a bird, it just should remind us that, you know, God provides for flowers and birds. And I'm greater than both because I'm made in his image. He'll take care of us. But the covetous person doesn't believe this. The covetous person will not accept that. So they're going to hoard and hold. We're in a holding pattern over our bank accounts. You know, we're never going to give it away. Or if we do, we'll dole it out tiny bit by tiny bit. The Lord says, and I'm done, seek the kingdom. He says, sell what you have. Give alms. Provide yourselves bags which wax not old. A treasure in the heavens that faileth not. Implication is all earthly treasures fail because either they're taken away or you're taken away from them. Okay, so once you die, your treasures fail, don't they? Because unless they put them in your tomb, and they're not, they ain't going nowhere, and you ain't taking them with you. When no thief approacheth, nor moth corrupt. That's coming up in verse 30, 32 and 33. And that's not the conclusion yet. I mean, you look at it, he says, for where your treasure is, there's where your heart be also. If your heart is covetous, that's where your treasure is. See, it all flows. He's not finished. Let your loins be girded about, your lights burning, and ye yourselves like unto men that wait for their Lord. I mean, he's saying preparation. The rest of the chapter after that is all preparation. Be ready for the Lord. And you can't be ready for the Lord holding on to the small L-O-R-D of materialism. You got to let this stuff go. You either live for here or the kingdom. That's the whole point that's coming up. If you're living for the kingdom, you let this stuff go. If you're living for now, you hoard and hold and make excuses. I can't study the Bible. I don't have time for God. That's because you got time for your hoarding. Okay. If you got time for covetousness, you'll never have time for God. Never. Because no man can serve two masters. Never going to be done. Say, this is uncomfortable to have to deal with. No, it isn't. It's not uncomfortable. What's uncomfortable is we don't want to admit we're covetous. That's the problem. We don't want to admit it. And then by admitting it, that means there's only one solution. And that's giving it away. We ain't going to do that. We got to hold on a little while longer. Because, you know, they're going to have a sale pretty soon. You see, we justify our disobedience by the word sale. And then we go down to the store. And, you know, I just sold the last sale doohickey you know, but if you come back, no, I ain't come back next week. What else you got? So you get the next thing. There's the next, usually it's the next bigger thing. You don't go, well, just forget, I don't need it. Now it's like, well, what do you got left? We got the bigger one. Yeah, well, that looks good. Choom! The hand that went to that pocket like a magnet to metal. Pull that wallet out, slap that. You ain't got, your card is overused. Shucks, put $100 on these, $300 on that, put $250 on that, put $17 on that, and the rest I'll pay in cash. Take it home, honey. We got it. It's on sale. And she won't tell you, fool, we don't need it. Because she knows if she bring it up, you're going to want a divorce. So you try to convince her it's okay, too. I hate you, Pastor Howard. Yeah, well, get in line. You know, because it really don't mean nothing. And again, no one's forcing anybody to watch or listen or whatever, because no one has to do either one. Apparently, that message has sunk through a lot of people. They don't come back, which is fine, too, because that, you know, the truth ain't going to change because you don't want to hear it. But I just get tired of folks want to play. If you want to play this, there's plenty of play churches out there that will tell you exactly. If you want to go to the Church of Covetousness, there's plenty of them out there. They'll tell you what you want to hear. They'll tell you exactly what you want to hear. But if you want to wear the same pair of pants at 9, 10 years old and not care, that's fine too. You want to wear a shirt that's 5, 6, 7 years old and not worry about it? I ain't got to worry about no shirts. Because they don't fit, I either lose weight or you know, tuck it in. I brought a shirt a long time. I know some folks, they got to have a shirt every 5, man. We're going there to have it. 15 white shirts, 20, one of these shirts in the closet now, about 15 years old. So you can't wear it. On a good day, I can wear it. If I tuck it in and get that jacket and clothes, you never know. That shirt was worn nice 30 pounds ago. So if I put everything in and put the right jacket on, you never know it. Say, why is he saying it? Because I'm trying to tell you, you don't need all this junk. You don't need it. It's all going to perish with the using anyway. Why? Well, okay. All right. Huh? With or without the use, because if either it will perish or you will, then it won't matter. You know, because if something happens to you, the last thing you worry about is that coat. You know, they put in paddles to clear, and you wake up, well, I sure hope I put gas in my car. I don't think you care about that coat. You don't care about nothing except getting well. You know what I'm saying? You ain't thinking about your coat or, oh, man, hope I got turkey at the right prices on sale. Are they clear? You ain't thinking about those things unless you crazy and covetous. Oh, hope the sale's still all clear. You know, you got one thing on your mind. That's, you know, hopefully that line, that flat line goes doop, and you got some life left in you. You know, because most folk, when they see the income, is, oh, my Lord, like that pilot that crashed that plane back in the East Coast with the de-icing his wings. He bragged about how he didn't de-ice the wings as the plane began to roll. And last without his mouth was Jesus Christ. It's too late to call on the Lord right now. Like I said, everybody want to call on the Lord when it's about time to meet their maker. Then, of course, he cussed too. Pilots always cuss before they die for some reason. Oh, blank. Well, that can't help you either. Everybody want to get a little God in them before they die. It's too late for getting God in you before you die. We need to live for the Lord while we have life. Stop living like, you know, every day is just going to keep on coming. There's going to be some time where, you know, and see, if you have been near that door, you know, that door of death, I've been there a few times, but folks don't care. You try to explain something, they just think it's all trivial. I'm telling you, I've been through that door too many times to know that life takes on a whole different meaning when you near that door. You wake up and you think, you know what? Life is different. You can't be the same person. Maybe some people need to experience that door and they get understanding. You know, I don't know. Some people just don't get it. I think they think that life's going to go on forever the way they want it, and there's never going to be any changes unless I authorize it. Lord, again, thank you for showing us that this great, great sin of covetousness, Lord, is so prevalent. It's everywhere. I pray that we would understand that the thoughts that you've given us about not worrying and not being fretful or anxious, they're all connected to that whole spirit of covetousness. Trusting in wealth and riches as if they themselves are that which give us life, and they are not. And it's not just the rich that have this problem, Lord. This problem is everywhere. Either that those that have it trying to keep it, or those that don't have it trying to get it. Or those that do have it trying to get more. There's always this trap of covetousness, Father. I pray that we would not give ourselves over to such madness. Madness of unbelief. Bless the bread and the cup, and may we remember Christ, Lord. And look to him to come and get us out of this crazy and foolish life. Lord, live for the kingdom. In Jesus' name, amen.